At the beginning of the programme there, I mentioned that we were going to be talking to Louise Leach, and that is coming up just after 10 o'clock. But before we do that, I'm going to take us back to July of 2018 when Louise and her mum came in to talk to us. And they talked to us about a lot of stuff, but particularly about Louise's sister, Marcella, and her two brothers who died in the Stardust fire. So this is just a few minutes of our interview back in 2018. Good morning to you both, and thank you very much for coming in.
Good morning, Joe.
And talking to us. Good morning to you, Breed. Now, I'd like to talk to you first about William, George and Marcella when they were grown up in... You were living in Edenmore at the time. That's right, Breed. Could you tell us a little bit about George and Marcella and William?
Well, George was the eldest boy of the family. Mm-hmm. June was the eldest, and William was the eldest boy of the family, and he was quiet in his own way, but he loved music.
Right.
He just loved he loved Mark Boland, T-Rex. That was his favourite. He loved those records.
Yeah.
And there was always music in the house.
Yeah.
When Willie was around, and he was quiet, and he went to school in Edenmore, and then he went to Colester Tech.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very good at woodwork. He liked woodwork.
Right.
And then when he left school, he was a helper on Lurie's
yeah
timber firm.
Yes.
And he liked that, so he was hoping to be a driver.
Mm-hmm.
at that time. The last picture we got of him was when he was going for his driving test.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And that was the last picture we had of Willie.
Of Willie, yeah.
But Willie was great. He was always joking. And the last joke he did on me was when he came in for his dinner, and he said, "Man, I have something for you." And he said, "Put your hand out." So I put my hand out, and he just with that and was a, it was a rubber mouse.
Oh.
It was just a joke.
Yeah.
A rubber mouse. He was always doing jokes and things like that. It was a rubber mouse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he give you a fright?
He did, in a way. Yeah, I jumped. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the night of the Stardust, then I went to bingo, and Willie went up to the pool hall in Edenmore.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Eugene's or one of them.
Yeah.
The brigade game of pool, and he came back. I was after being in bingo, and he came back about 10 o'clock, and he said, I said, "Mum, I think I'll go up to the Stardust."
Mm-hmm.
But I said, "You never go out like that late."
Yeah.
Never. He really wasn't into discos or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes up and changed into his clothes, new clothes and that, and came down. And the last thing I did for Willie was I put his tie on. He couldn't make the knot in his tie.
Like all fellas.
And that was the last thing I did for Willie.
Oh, my God.
That night.
Putting his tie on.
For Willie that night.
Yeah.
And he went down. That was the last I seen of Willie.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And George. George was younger than Willie again.
George was a bit of a hard ticket.
Right.
Yeah.
A rogue.
A rogue.
A bit of a rogue in his own way. But he was always getting into trouble, but not serious trouble, but on the road with the other children and friends and things like that. But he too loved music. He loved me. I can't remember who his favourite pop star was at the time, but he loved music.
Mm-hmm. David
George
Bowie, probably, or somebody
Bowie,
like that.
Yeah. Things like that.
And I remember him one time he came in, and he was late coming in. Anyway, I went to bed anyway, and the next morning I got up, and he was asleep in the sitting room.
Mm-hmm.
He was fast asleep, and he had a hat on his head.
Yeah.
And I said, what are you doing in here? And what have you got the hat in your head? And he said, I don't touch that hat, leave it. Don't, I wanted to take it off. And it was like an army hat.
Right.
Like one of those army hats and what. Where he used to love going to Howth with his friends, and they used to play cards. But anyway, he made a bet with one of his friends up in Howth playing cards that if he... I don't know whether if he won the game or lost the game or whatever, they'd shave his head.
Oh my God. So he obviously...
So he lost.
He lost the game. And that was George.
Oh, yeah.
That
God.
Was the only team for a, yeah. a bet, and that yeah. was George.
He'd always yeah. walk around with a pocket full of change.
Change,
he always
yeah.
had a pocket full of change. Yeah. So yeah. if anyone said, do you fancy a game of cards or poker, he'd be, yeah, I'm in.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
and fair play to him, if he had to pay up, he'd pay up. So
yeah.
obviously
yeah.
he'd lose his hair and God knows what else he
yeah.
lost.
Yeah. yeah. I think I'll just move your mic in there a bit. There you yeah. How was that?
Right.
Now,
yeah.
so and he the head was shaved. He lost the game.
He lost the game
yeah.
anyway. But as Louise said, he always had loose change in his pocket.
Yes.
But he was very good natured.
Mm-hmm.
The younger children on the road, he was always giving them money.
Yeah.
There's maybe sixpence or
whatever he could
whatever
afford,
like that.
Yeah.
You know, he was very good natured.
But,
yeah, he loved children.
Yeah,
yeah, he loved Lovely. Playing with
yeah.
children.
And of course, the shaved head is all fashion now.
It's yeah. all the fashion.
He's
now.
Ahead of his time.
And yeah. It was just the night of the tragedy. I was going to bingo and Paul or. George was getting ready and he washed his hair and he had a new shirt. I got him a new shirt, not for that particular night now, but I got him a new shirt.
Yeah.
And he had a jacket he had for a while. It was, and he put on the jacket and washed the hair, put on the jacket and the shirt and the whole lot, and came down to me and said, now my grand, now my cheese bees, you know. I said, you're lovely. And the last thing George gave me that night, he said, there's a packet of silver mint for your bingo.
Right.
He gave me a packet of silver mint from the bingo.
Yeah, yeah.
And enjoy your bingo.
Enjoy your bingo.
And he went off to his...
He was going on a date, wasn't he?
Well, I think he had a date that night.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, and the girl he had the date with, he was to meet her up in the Stardust. But as far as I know, and I was told that that poor girl died as well.
Oh my God.
I don't know who she was now.
Oh,
she was a country girl, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, okay, were there girlfriends for William and George? Did they have girlfriends? As you say, he was on his first date probably with that girl.
Yes, he was on his first date.
Tell us a little bit about Marcella. Was Marcella in secondary school or what was she up to?
Yeah, Marcella was in secondary school. She went to Clash to Doolick as well, and she was working at part-time in Duns and North Dale Street.
Right.
And like that again, Marcella loved her music as well.
Yeah, they all did.
We all did. And she was mad into, like, at that time she was into, like, the Specials, all the ska and the Selector, and loved dancing, loved music and dancing. Always in good form, like, and very gentle, very kind as well. Like, she'd Marcella would give you her last penny as well.
Right.
Like, when all the girls would stay in sleep in the same room. Of course, she'd have her makeup and clothes and things, and she'd, you know, we'd be asking, well, we were younger, can you do us up and make us up? And she would, like, you know, she loved it, you know. She was very kind, a dancer.
Yeah.
She loved dancing.
Yeah.
Well.
And when she was doing them up, putting on the makeup bridge, were you happy with that? Did you say, don't be putting that on them?
Well, you see, she did do ballroom dancing.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah, she did do ballroom dancing. And, of course, at the ballroom dancing, they had to wear
all the
lipstick and the makeup and the... And the hair, I used to do the hair.
Right.
Her hair and other little girls' hairs. And she was a ballroom dancer. And she loved music.
Lovely.
And she loved doing things for you.
Yeah.
And that particular day, she was due to go into Dunn's in North Dale Street.
Mm-hmm.
And she was due in at 4 o'clock, I think. And she said, "Mum, do you want any shops?" She loved doing the shopping. So I said, "Yeah, go down and get a few groceries for me in Rahini." And off she went, and she came back. And she said, "I'm after buying you something nice." She loved buying things. So she put in my house. It was a lovely cream cake.
Lisa wasn't a mouse.
No. She said, "We make a cup of tea now. We have a cream cake."
Lovely.
And she got ready then and went off to Dunn's. And that was the last I seen of Marcella.
Told us she was babysitting that night.
Yes.
Yeah, she was.
We thought she was babysitting, but you know yourself at that age.
I didn't know she was gone.
Right.
I didn't know she was gone. Yeah.
So she had her clothes with her and changed in her friend's house.
Yeah.
And then went.
Yeah. And her friend was Donna Mann.
Donna Mann. And Nolan Dillon.
Yeah. What did Marcella ever say what she wanted to do when she left school? Had she any ambitions? Hairdressing or whatever, or something like that? No?
Well, she did talk about hairdressing all right to me a few times about doing hairdressing. But that was about it. She didn't, I don't think she'd anything really in mind.
She had nothing really in mind.
No, it's just the hairdressing.
Yeah.
Well, she was still only 16, yeah. So she was quite young. Yeah, still trying to make decisions and decide
She was 16 when tragedy happened. She was only a month away from her 17th birthday. Mm-hmm. Marcella's birthday was on the 5th of March. Mm-hmm. Georgie's birthday was on the 20th of March. Mm-hmm. And William's birthday was on the 23rd of March.
I'm delighted to welcome now to the programme Louise Leach. Louise, good morning to you.
Morning, Joel. How are you?
I'm very well, and it's nice to talk to you. It's been a while since we had a chat.
It certainly has. 4 years.
Indeed. I know that in 2018 that you were here with your mum, and I think maybe about a year later you came up with Morris. Isn't that right? Morris McHugh, isn't that
right?
At the time, yeah. Can I ask you, how is your mum keeping these days?
She's grand. She's not too bad. She was 85 there in January, just gone.
Right.
So it was actually really funny because we had said to her, "We try and do something for your birthday," and she said, "Well, no, I don't know. She's I'm too old." And I said, "You're not. You're only 85." And she laughed. She actually thought she was older than that.
Oh, right. Okay. So
she's in good form.
She's in good form. Okay. Yeah. So as I say, it's been a while since we have spoken to you. So I suppose the reason why we wanted to talk to you this morning was, of course, naturally enough, it's the anniversary this Monday, 41 years. Yeah. And we wanted to find out what has been happening since we last spoke to you. Go ahead.
Lots of things has happened. When I last spoke to you, and then with Morris McHugh, we had just kind of started the Truth campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the campaign which Sinn Féin and Mary Lou McDonald helped us, and Lynn Boylan and Enda Fannin set this whole thing up, and it was just absolutely fantastic. So the Truth campaign was where we had cards made up with Truth on the front of them, mm-hmm. and on the back to ask the public to support us in the Attorney General opening up the inquest again.
Right.
So we decided, all the families, if we just decided, right, even if we get 10,000, we go out every weekend and we said we'd start obviously in Dublin on the north side, like all the shopping centres like Sword, Pavilion, Donnymead, Edenmore, all those, Blanchardstown, all those big shopping centres.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that. We split up into groups, different groups, so kind of every area would be covered. And it just was phenomenal. We didn't realise the amount of people that came. People actually came out to us for saying, "We actually knew you were here today and we wanted to come and speak to you."
Mm.
You know, because we were a bit concerned, people doing their shopping on a Saturday, their day off. Nobody likes to be stopped and asked, but it was unreal. It was, and we just didn't stay in Dublin. We ended up in Wexford, in Galway, and we ended up in Derry. The people from Derry, the Bloody Sunday Trust, ended up there, They're just fantastic as well. The support we got from them.
Yeah.
Mainly the support of the public was fantastic.
Yeah, because one of the things is that, like, at the time of the fire, there were people, not just from Dublin, but there was a lad from Derry, if I'm not mistaken, yeah. And I think there was somebody from
Morgan.
Yeah, and then there was somebody from, was there Tipperary? So they were really, they came from really all over the country.
Yeah.
Yeah, on that particular.
They did, and
yeah.
It was great when we started the campaign. We never realised that the amount of people that came to talk to us that were in the Stardust that night were people who in the Stardust that night that mm-hmm. never talked about it and never thought they could talk about it
mm-hmm.
and actually came to us, and the stories that we heard and the stories they gave back to us was unbelievable. Like mm-hmm. it was quite emotional listening to some of the stories. We thought we'd heard everything,
yeah,
but through that campaign we heard even more, you know.
Yeah. I have to say, listening back to your mam there during the week, like, that's hard, especially when she talks about it, like, February comes around and then the birthdays are in March as well mm-hmm. and I mean that's just you know, that's hard stuff to deal with, as you say, and the stories that you heard in and around the country
it was just it's the same thing, I think, every year, this time of the year, we all dread it, but yes,
mm.
we know we all have to keep going and we still have to fight for them.
Yeah.
Like, and we're still fighting for them, you know, things haven't moved on a lot, but it hasn't been easy.
They still try to
make it harder for us every time we get somewhere. They still try to put us back down, but we still keep getting back up.
Yeah. Now, I know you were saying to me during the week that you had some news, and I heard Antoinette talking to he'll kill me because his name is gone. Yesterday morning on our Noel McGuinness. God, I've sat in for him enough times. I heard Antoinette talking to Noel yesterday, but I'll just talk to you about that in a second. But of course, since we've spoken, Antoinette's mum has passed away.
Yeah, sadly. I mean, it's when Joe, just when we collected all the cards for the Truth campaign, we collected 48,000, and we could have collected 98,000.
Yeah.
But we just didn't have more time. So on the November 2018, we handed the Truth camp. We all of us met in town. We handed the cards into the Attorney General. It was brilliant. They came down from Derry, the Carrick Mine survivors. Everybody came with us
mm-hmm.
and handed them in. The public that signed them came with us. So we handed them in, and obviously we were waiting. And then September 2019, that's when the Attorney General contacted the families to say that, yes, there was enough new evidence to open a new inquest.
Very good. Go ahead, sorry.
And then after that, it was all guns blazing.
Louise, one of the people, of course, that was there that day, and we spoke to him ourselves there, we have him on recording, was Eugene. Is it Eugene Kelly, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And
Eugene Kelly. Mm-hmm.
He passed away as well, I believe.
Yeah, it was very sad because, God love, Mrs. Keegan passed away in the July.
Yeah.
And then in the October, Eugene died suddenly as well.
Mm.
And it was such a shame because two people who have fought right from the beginning as well in this campaign all the way through and put so much of everything, the heart and soul into it, and then hope they aren't here now to see where we've got, but we know they're looking down on us and with us all the way still, you know.
Yeah. So what's the situation as it stands now? I know there's something, I want you to explain it. I know there's something about a jury and there's a venue.
Mm-hmm. Well, so we had, as the solicitors, everything got ready from the Truth campaign, and we had to get all statements, witnesses. So all of that's been going on. And then, of course, the pandemic knocked it for six as well.
Mm-hmm.
But then we had a venue. We got a venue, the RDS, and everything was set up and the families were brought in to see the venue, to see the layout, to see where we'd be sitting, what would be done, where we, you know, the whole thing, and it was done really, really well.
Mm.
And so that was fine, that was going ahead, but then of course there's still little blocks along the way that the government would say, when the budget was made, the starters was allocated money for this new inquest, but then the government, the Minister of Justice, says, well, hold on, they wanted all the families to apply for legal aid.
Who was the Minister of Justice at that time?
Humphreys. Okay. Minister Humphreys.
Heather Humphreys.
So the families, everybody else is covered, mm-hmm. but the families who are fighting for their loved ones, we had to apply for free legal aid, and they put us through all of that, like to give all our personal details, everything. Mm-hmm. And of course they knew that that would take a lot of time, and they also knew that some of the families wouldn't qualify for it. They would be over the limit, mm-hmm. so they wouldn't be able to go to court and pay to try and get justice for their loved ones. So that was a huge stumbling block for us. So eventually we fought that anyway, so that took months, and we were granted then that we didn't have to apply for free legal aid.
Yeah.
So then loads of other things were coming into it as well. So we then, the venue for the RDS, now the lease is up on the venue for the RDS, so we had to look for a new venue. Mm-hmm. So that has been dragging on and dragging on as well, but there, only on Wednesday, we have been allocated a new venue, the pillar rooms behind the Rotunda Hospital.
All right.
So that's where the new venue, please God, is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a smaller
venue than you were getting in the RDS?
I don't know. I think it's about the same. I haven't been in it, Joe. A few have said it's quite a big building. So hopefully, you know, and plus, I suppose for us, it's on the north side, so we haven't got too far to travel to get to it, you know.
Yeah.
It'd be kind of easier for us. So that was that. And you know, that only happened on Wednesday gone. There was another preliminary hearing in the RDS. But then the other thing we have now is that Mr. Butterley, solicitors, and obviously there's going to be, we want a jury, there'll be a jury, but Mr. Butterley and his sisters want a verdict of unlawful killing not be allowed mm-hmm. be brought in to the case. So we're actually saying, how can you, before a jury has even heard the evidence, he wants this verdict scrapped. He doesn't want this or any other. So how can you ask a jury to sit, listen to evidence, and if they come up with a verdict that is that, mm-hmm. they're not allowed. So it's absolutely farcical, like you just wouldn't believe it, you know what I mean? But this is what they're doing now. So we're fighting that at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like, does the coroner have the right to allow a verdict of unlawful killing or any other to be ruled out before the jury even have heard the evidence.
Right, right. And talk to me about, is there something about paying for the jury? What is that?
Yeah, the jury, because it's not like your normal inquest. They're called from a different electorate roll.
Mm-hmm.
So they're saying that if they have a jury, they won't be paid.
Right.
So they're saying, so how can you ask a jury to sit for 3 months or 6 months mm-hmm. and not be paid?
Yes, yeah.
So then the only other alternative is, if it's a jury that's not going to pay, that you're looking at like people who are retired or people who don't have mortgages and bills and things, but then that's very biased because they're of a certain age, you know? So
yeah.
It's...
And is that a normal thing? I mean, it seems a bit odd to me. I understand.
It is.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I think it is. Because it's an inquest. It's a coroner's inquest, so it's a different. The jury are selected a different way.
Yeah.
And seeing that, thought and Garda Síochána Conor, they would be the ones who would select the jury, but obviously they can't because they are involved in this inquest.
Mm.
So that would be a conflict of interest. So they can't. So that's another thing that we are fighting at the moment as well. So every time, you know, there's always going to be stumbling blocks. And each time you get over one,
another one.
Put another one in front of you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's that's been like that for a long time.
For years. Since 41 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, there like 41 years ago, there are young people probably in their 20s and whatever, and they wouldn't have a clue. They wouldn't know anything about, really, the Stardust Fire. And it seems to me that if you go for as you were saying there, if you went for a jury, that's an elderly jury, right? Whereas if you had a younger jury, they would think differently.
And absolutely.
Like, mm-hmm. It wouldn't be accepted. What happened in 81 wouldn't be accepted now.
No, absolutely not.
That's where a younger generation would look at it totally different. If you know what I mean. Tomorrow is a big day.
Huge, absolutely huge. Yeah, we have there's a mass on St. Joseph's Church in Coolock at 11:30.
Mm-hmm.
And they have that every year. And then we walk over to the memorial park and lay wreaths and flowers. And then it's on to the actual Stardust site at 1:00 for the candlelight vigil.
Yeah.
So it would be very emotional, very touching. And we have... Christy Moore is going to be there, and he's going to be singing the song he wrote, "They Never Come Home."
Mm-hmm.
And Charlie Bird is going to be there as well, and his wife.
Yeah.
There, so with Hugh, he's been just fantastic for us, Charlie. Yeah. You know, he's an amazing man.
Indeed, as you know, we he had that great program there, probably about three or four years ago on RTE there, where he visited all the families, and of course at the time he was a young reporter, and he was the first on the scene on the night. So how the other people that are involved, I'm not sure if there's a committee of yourselves, but how have they been all keeping it? Coming up to the anniversary. Yeah?
They're all fine. You know, there is a committee, and then but a lot more people have come on board now, more of the families who either they just couldn't face it, or, you know, it was just too hard for them. But thank God a lot more have come on board now and have come with us. I want to know the truth.
Yeah.
They want to know what happened. They're all okay. They're fine. I mean, like... Sadly, Mrs. Keegan's gone, and Eugene, and like my mother's 85 now, and you, Phyllis and Morris McHugh, are like they're all getting on in age, and obviously we'd love for them to see justice, definitely, and then the rest of us, and like Antoinette and her family, their family, like there's loads of people, and then the survivors, you know, like Jimmy Fitzpatrick and. That were in the fire, you know,
that still
have to live with the scars of it every day.
I think we spoke to Jimmy that day when we were in on the march there as well. Mm-hmm. And of course, like how you say, like there was over 200 young people were actually, as you say, seriously injured and scarred for life after the fire. And they want to know. They want to know, or their families want to know, and their friends and everything else, what really happened that night.
Of course they do, And don't forget Joe, and there's a lot of people who committed suicide after that a lot of people don't know about, you know, and just couldn't live. A lot of people said they couldn't live with the guilt.
Yeah.
They got out, their friend didn't, their family, you know, a lot of that. And a lot of that was pushed under the carpet, and a lot of that was here. They didn't want that to come out into the public eye. They didn't want people to know what really happened then, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But thank God, over the years now, and especially over the last couple of years, people have come out, and because of the True campaign, they've come out and they said, "No, I remember what happened. I remember that this happened," and all the witnesses and people that were there. And I think that's when we put the True cards in, and the True and Jonah said, "Yes, I can see."
Yeah, and would there have been counselling around at that time? You know, going back to
absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing.
So
nothing. You were just told to get on with it.
Yeah.
You know.
So when you just brought out the the cards, the Truth Campaign cards, and you met all the people. That was probably their first time to actually interact with anyone regarding this.
And it was, Joe. It was, yeah.
It helped them greatly, yeah.
Well, there was one, I always remember a couple in the pavilions, and it was the public were just fantastic, and I could see this couple standing in the sideways, and this man and woman, and she kind of, his wife was kind of pulling him, and he came over and he said he couldn't talk about it for years. He was a bank teller in the bank down the road from the Stardust.
Right.
And he remembered it so vividly.
Mm-hmm.
And he, and obviously I can't say, someone came into the bank with notes, but they smelt of burnt notes.
Yeah, right.
And he was made count them, but he refused to count them because he knew where they came from. And he said he'll never forget that day. So he said that he was handling that money that belonged to those people. And he broke down, like he was very, very upset. Like he said, I wanted to say things, and thank God people, because of that, have come forward, and the new evidence we have is brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, it got it off their chest as well, that they actually said it now, do you know?
Yes, understand that. Understand. Mm. So tomorrow morning, St. Joseph's at 11:30 Mass, and then it's on to the Memorial Park, and then it's a walk down to the Stardust its place itself, and that 1:00, and you'll have Christy Moore and will be there, and Charlie Bird, and you want as many people as possible to come down.
Absolutely.
And be with you all. Okay.
Could I just say as well quickly that if people don't know, there's a play going on called The 48.
Right, yes.
It's on in town, and it's on in Beauty's Cafe in town, and it's a young group of art Dublin people who put this play together of the actual day and night of what happened. And if people just look it up online, it's absolutely fantastic. Now, it's actually quite the core, and they're fantastic actors. If anyone gets a chance, it's running all next week and the week after that, and it's a really good play to go see.
Okay, very good, very good. And I just let you know that I was talking to the powers that be yesterday here, and on Monday they're going to put up our interview and our other little piece on our podcast on Monday. So if anybody wants to listen back to what we were talking about this morning, it'll be up on the Near FM Off the Shelf, Near FM podcast on Monday morning. So there you go, Louise.
Right.
Look after yourself, and we may see you tomorrow. If we can get a chance, we'll go up, if that's okay.
No problem.
With yourselves.
Brilliant.
And
absolutely.
Love to your mam, and take care of yourselves.
Thank you.
Okay,
thanks very much.
You're
Joe.
Very welcome.
Take care.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.